Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Membam of Nevet, seven lines up. The Gemara here is discussing the question as to whether a muflas, a muflaish, that takes a neder, is that neder binding midoraita, or is that neder only binding midirabanan? The Gemara is bringing different proofs as to the ability or the capacity of a muflas, a muflaish, to deal with issues that are deoraita, or issues that are dirabanan. In this last iteration, the Gemara discussed the possibility that he can solve the problem of truma. And Truma and Hekdesh, as we've noted already, are a form of neder. And here you have a problem de oraita of Tevel, and the Muflas HaMuflish, taking off or removing the Truma, is solving a problem de oraita, which would seem to imply that there is a capacity mido oraita for a Muflas HaMuflish to solve a Torah problem. And that's all premised on this idea that Rabbi Yossi believes that Truma Bizman HaZeh is de oraita. The Gemara says, you don't have to believe that. Rabbi Yossi believes that Truma Bizman HaZeh Midirabanan. Once you do that, then you can lower the necessary threshold to fix the problem of Tevel to a rabbinic issue, and therefore a Muflas HaMuflish, who's only rabbinically binding in his Nidarim, would be sufficient to solve the problem. Now the Gemara says, V'savar Rabbi Yossi Truma Bizman HaZeh Midirabanan. Does Rabbi Yossi really believe that Truma Bizman HaZeh is only rabbinic in nature? V'atanya b'Seder Olam. We have a braita in Seder Olam. Seder Olam Rabbah is the history of the world according to Chazal. And it goes through all the dates, the years. Many of the things that we see in the Gemara are quoted from Seder Olam Rabbah as to the historical chronology that the Gemara is looking for in terms of years, dates, and so on and so forth. There's a braita that's brought. Asher Yeshua v'techa v'rishta. Yerusha Rishona Vishniya Yesh Lehem Shlishit Ein Lehem. So based on the Pasuk that says that there are two Yerushot, because the word Yerusha is mentioned twice, the Braita concludes that there is a Yerusha Rishona which established Kedusha. There was a Yerusha Shniya that established Kedusha. That means in the time of Yeshua there was a Kedusha. In the time of Ezra there was a Kedusha. But Shlishit Ein Lehem. There will be no other Kedusha after this. Meaning that the second Kiddusha in the time of Ezra was permanent. The one in the time of Yeshua was temporary. Therefore, it had to be consecrated again in the time of Ezra. But that one in Ezra is permanent because there will be no Kiddusha Shlishit. And based on that, it's clear that the din of Trumot, Masrot, and the mitzvot of Tulil Baretz would be Doraita today because the Kiddusha was permanent in the time of Ezra. Who is the author of Seder Olam Rabbah? Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta. It is Rabbi Yossi himself that is the author. The other places in Shas, the Gemara says about Rabbi Yossi, Tamo Bini Miko Imo, that he is considered to have a very high level of reliability, that his quotations are considered to have tremendous integrity to them, and he is the author of Seder Olam Rabbah. And that's why Chazal rely heavily on Seder Olam Rabbah in terms of their looking at historical chronology. And if that's the case, if he's the author of Seder Olam Rabbah, now you have a definitive proof that Rabbi Yossi believes that Trumot Masrot are Midoraita Bizman HaZeh. Where it says, Rabbi Yossi Tanila Velo Sabrala. He brought the Braita down in Seder Olam Rabbah, but that doesn't mean he subscribes to it. The interesting point is that when you speak about the Mishnah, we say that Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. But that is because Rabbi organized the Mishnayot, and he made the Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, by Seder Olam Rabbah, it's Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta that is organizing it, and he's also the one that made it into a Stam. So it's interesting that he would bring a Stam Seder Olam Rabbah Braita that is not to his liking necessarily, or not according to his opinion, because he's the one both organizing it, and he is the unattributed author of Seder Olam Rabbah. So that's interesting or slightly different than we would expect by the Mishnayot. Although Rashi compares the two and says just like Rabbi Meir is Stam Mishnah, so too the Stam Seder Olam Rabbah is Rabbi Yossi. But again, he being the author and the organizer and the Stam makes it a little more interesting that he brought Breitot that he did not subscribe to. And the Gemara says, Achanami Mistabra, that makes sense. The Tanya, we have a braita, Isa, Shinid Ma'a, Oshinit Chamtza, Bisaor Shel Truma. So you have an Isa, a piece of dough, that got mixed up with dough from Truma, or got mixed up with sourdough of Truma, that causes it to rise. Chayevet Bichala. It has an obligation to give Chala, ve'ena nifselet b'tvul yom, and it doesn't have a din of becoming pasul b'tvul yom, divrei Rabbi Meir ve'Rabbi Yehuda. That is because they clearly believe that the governing item here is the chulin. It says the governing item here is the chulin, your chayav in chala, because chala comes off of an isa of chulin. It does not come off of an isa of truma. Number two is, it's clear that they are treating it not like truma, because truma can be a shlishi the tuma. With chulin, it ends at sheni the tuma. A tvul yom is a sheni the tuma. So if a tvul yom cannot convey tuma to this item, that means that the item is considered chulin and not truma. Or in essence, what they're saying is that the truma is batel to the chulin that is incorporated there. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, potrin min achala. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon believe that the item is now patur min achala, which means they think that the truma is governing over here. And if it's deemed to be truma, then you wouldn't bring chala from it, and you would be subject to the tuma of a tvul yom, sabrua. So we would have thought, mandamar truma de oraita, chala de oraita. We're making an assumption that whoever thinks that truma bizman hazeh is de oraita also believes that chala is de oraita bizman hazeh. There's a correlation between the two items. Mandamar, the one who says that truma de rabbanan, chala de rabbanan. And the one who says that truma bizman hazeh is de rabbanan, also believes that chala is midrabanan. So now, Iyamart, if you explain the braita in the following manner, bishlamalka sover Rabbi Yoshi, chala bizman hazeh dirabanan, if you believe that chala bizman hazeh is only rabbinic in nature, then ate dimua dirabanan umapke chala dirabanan. Then the mix dirabanan can come and override the din of chala midrabanan. If you think that the obligation to give today chala is de oraita, ata dimua de rabbanon, umavka chala de oraita, how could it be that a mixture mid rabbanan could overcome the issue of having to give chala mid oraita? As Rashi explains over here, there is a difference between bitol mid oraita and the bitol mid rabbanan. And that is that when it comes to bitol min haTorah, acharei rabim latot, we go after the majority. Whatever the majority is, governs, and that is the status of this item. On the other hand, the Chachamim required, with regards to Truma, that in order to be Batel, the Truma needs 100 to 1 in order for it not to be considered Truma. And in other areas like Kilei HaKerem and Orla, they require 200 to 1, and the Gemara's assumption is that that is rabbinic in nature. Therefore, over here, where the Chulin is the majority, that it's more than 50% of this mixture is chulin, then it is batel mido oraita. Mido rabbanan, they don't have enough to be mivatel the truma. It's less than 100 to 1. That's why it's called dimua. That's why it's called a mixture of chulin and truma. So mido rabbanan, you have a mixture of truma and chulin. Mido oraita, you have only chulin over here. So now Rabbi Yossi is saying that when it comes to this item, it's patur min achala. You don't have to give chala from it. That means he believes it's a mixture of truma, and the truma is sufficiently strong over here to block your need to have to give chala. Now, midoraita, it's batel. It's chulin midoraita. Midrabanan, it's still truma because of the requirement of 100 to 1. So that means that the mixture here is only classified as truma midrabanan. Now, if you believe that chala or the requirement to give chala is midrabanan, then you can have a din derabbanan of truma that says this mixture is truma come and undermine a chiyuv chala midrabbanan. That makes sense. But if you think the chiyuv chala today is midoraita, then how could you have a dimua midrabbanan, something that's midoraita chulin, and only a mixture midrabbanan of truma? How could that undermine your obligation to give chala midoraita? So what the Gemara wants to prove from this is that Rabbi Yossi clearly believes that chala and shuma bizman hazeh are dirabanan, and given that they are both dirabanan bizman hazeh, then it would also support what we just said about the previous braita, that even though it's brought in Seder Olam Rabbah, Rabbi Yossi doesn't necessarily subscribe to it. So even though that braita said that shuma is d'oraita bizman hazeh, Rabbi Yossi doesn't subscribe to it and believes that shuma bizman hazeh is dirabanan, and that is backed up by his position with regards to the mixture of Truma and Chulin over here. That is the proposition that the Gemara is putting forth at this time. Now, the Balei HaTosafot say, Mikan mevi riva rayat Truma betela berov d'oraita. From this Gemara, the riva brings a proof that Truma midoraita is batel berov. That's exactly what seems to be what the Gemara is laying out here. The difference between d'oraita and d'rabanan is that d'oraita is chulin, d'rabanan it's only Truma, which implies that d'oraita, the chulin, governs because it's the majority. Midrabanan, it's Truma because it doesn't meet the standard of the Rabbanan of 100 to 1. So that is the Riva's conclusion from this Gemara over here. And he says the same thing with regards to Orla and Kilea Kerem, where they are double the requirement, 200 to 1. He again says it's only rabbinically ordained. It is not Midoraita. Midoraita, it is Batel Berov. And then the Tosafot says over here, maybe not. How do you know that this is really a proof to that position? Because over here, there are two things that are happening. Maybe midoraita, the mixture of less than 100 to 1 of chulin in truma, is a problem midoraita. The only thing is, how do you know that the truma over here can convert the chulin into truma so that the whole thing doesn't need challah taken off of it? Why don't you just say it's a mixture of truma and chulin, and the percentage of chulin and Truma will determine how much challah you need to take off. That might be the rabbinic aspect of it. He says that the fact that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say you are patur min challah might be a number of stages. It might be that midoraita, that you need 100 to 1 in order to be batel. And in this instance, you don't have that. And so the mixture is still a mixture of Truma and Chulin. Just because you have a mixture of Truma and Chulin doesn't mean the Chulin should be patur min challah. It's a mixture. And the chulin aspect is to be chayav chalah. That's what Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are saying, turim min chalah. In this instance, the truma is strong enough to convert the chulin into truma, and therefore it will not be chayav in chalah. You could conclude that the 100 to 1 requirement is d'oraita, and nevertheless still fit into our Gemara, because our Gemara is speaking about the fact that the chulin is converted into truma, and that might only be a din d'rabbanan. So you can't prove from here that the whole din of 100 to 1 is d'rabbanan, because I could come up with a way in a nuanced fashion to make it fit into our Gemara and still say that it's the Rabbanan. Although the Balei HaTosafot then back away and say we have proof some other places in Shas, it seems to be that the 100 to 1 and the 200 to 1 requirements are only rabbinic in nature, and that it really is Batel Midoraita with a majority, which seems to be the simple interpretation of a Gemara, and that's why the Riva brought it as a proof to his position, though the Tosafot shows that it doesn't necessarily have to be a mukach proof. You could get out of that proof, but nevertheless, it happens to be true that which the Riva is saying. The Gemara says, "V'dilma kasover Rav Yosi truma b'zman hazed d'oraita v'chala d'rabanan." How do you know that you have to correlate the two items? Maybe Rav Yosi holds that truma today is d'oraita and chala is d'rabanan, and in that way, the truma d'oraita can deal with a chala midrabanan, because you have here a truma midoraita, which again is batel berov, but you have this the rabbinic imposition that the 100 to 1 makes it still to be a tarovet, and if chala is only midrabanan, then this truma midrabanan can offset the requirement of chala midrabanan, and in that way you can separate between the two items. Our assumption was that the two are correlated, that whatever is true of challah is true of truma, whatever is true of truma is true of challah. That's how we explained the braita that we brought before, which is that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon must believe that it's d'rabbanan, and that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda must believe that it is d'oraita. Therefore, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda believe that d'imua of truma is only midrabanan. Challah is midoraita. That's why it cannot erase the need to give challah over here. It's Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon believe that both are midrabanan, and therefore, the din d'rabbanan of dimua can erase the obligation of challah midrabanan. Gemara says, why do you have to say it that way? Why can't it be Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda believe that challah is d'oraita, but the dimua of truma is midrabanan? And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon hold just the opposite, that truma b'zman hazeh is d'oraita, and challah is only midrabanan. Ukidahate Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yehoshua. The similar response that Rav Huna b'Rav Yehoshua had. Amar Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yehoshua. Askechintu the Rabbanan the Beit Rav. I found the Rabbanan in the Beit Midrash of Rav, the Yatvev Kamre, who we were saying, Afilu lemandamar Truma bizmanazid the Rabbanan, even according to the one who says that Truma today is the Rabbanan, Chala de Oraita. Chala could still be the Oraita. Share. Sheva shekibshu, v'sheva shechilku, nitchaivu b'chala. As we're going to see in a second, for the 7 years of kibush and chiluk, when they entered into the land of Israel for the first 14 years, they were chayavim in chala. And that is because by chala, it says, bo'achem el ha'aretz, and the sifrei, the Midrash Halacha says about that, shina katu b'biyazu mikol b'yotchi b'torah. The way that this entrance into the land is described is different than any other entrance. All the other entrances say, ki tavou, ki avou, but it doesn't say bivoachem. Boachem is an unusual terminology to use. It's uniquely used by chala, and that teaches us that the bia by chala, the entrance by chala is different than any other entrance, and that is at the moment of entrance there to Israel, that is what drives or obligates one in the chiyuv of chala. Velo nitchayvu b'maser, and they were not chayav in maser. Rashi over here says the reason being, because it says, tvuat zarecha, that it has to be your tvuah. And it can only be when you have an identified plot of land, or an identified yerusha, that you can give my throat. And that can only happen after the kibush v'chiluk. The Gemara in different places uses the word either v'no yitchaivu b'truma, or lo yitchaivu b'maser. And Rashi explains them differently in each of these places. As Rashi writes in the Gemara Ketuvot, he brings the same thing that he brings over here, Dichtiv de Gancha, or Tvat Zaracha, Hamyuchedet Lecha, has to be yours in particular. Va'od, Sherei Chatala, Hakatuba Maser, Biminyan Shnot HaShemitah. There's a correlation between Maser and Shnot HaShemitah, because it says, B'Shnat HaShlishit, Shnat HaMaser. So you see a correlation between the counting of the 7 year cycle of the Shemitah and the Maser. And Shemitot, Lomanu, Elim Shinkav Shuv Vichilko. Then the Shemitot only start getting counted once there's Kibush and Chiluk, because as it says in Seder Olam Rabbah and Masechet Arachin, it shows you that that is the case. So that's how Rashi explains it in the Gemara in Ketubot. He adds on that additional reason as to why Trumot and Masrot are different than Chala. And in Bava Metzia, Rashi says the reason is because the Pasuk says, Aser Taser, and right afterwards it says, Asher Yivchar, Ash Nivchar Ashilo, Lo Nitchaivu. Until Shiloh was chosen, there wasn't any chiyuv. Behindu, and then when was Shiloh chosen? Achar kibush v'chiluk. That's only after they had kibush v'chiluk at the Yoshua. Chol yemei kibush v'chiluk, there was an Ol Moed in the Gilgal for those 14 years. And so therefore, only once you reach aser taser to the makom asher yibchar Hashem, you need a place that's chosen, meaning that Shiloh, a place where the Mishkan is located, then that's when maser kicks in. So that's a third reason Esther Rashi brings that Masrot are determined by kibush v'chiluk and not upon the entrance into the land. That's not true by chala, and therefore the obligation of chala starts immediately upon entering the land. For 14 years there's a chiyuv chala, yet there is no chiyuv of truma or maser. So they believe that's an indication that even if you believe that truma is the rabbanan, chala is the oraita, because chala has this chumra that is associated with it. Va'amina dehu, and Rav Huna Breid Vishu says to them, I believe just the opposite. That even if you believe that Shuma b'zman hazeh d'oraita, chala is the Rabbanan. Netanya, we have a braita in Ketubot. I b'voachem. Says the word b'voachem. Yochom shenichnesu la shnayim v'shlosha miraglim. You would think the explanation of b'voachem means when the two or three miraglim enter into the land, that would already obligate the entire Jewish people in chala. Tamalomar bivoachem biviat kuchem amarti below biviat mikzatchem. That when you enter the land, meaning all of you enter the land, that's when the obligation of chala kicks in, and not biviat mikzatchem, and not when only a portion of you enter the land. Vichiat askinu Ezra lo kulu saluk. And the problem is, in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, when Ezra came up, he did not have biat kuchem, he only had biat mitzatchem. That bia mitzatchem makes it that the chiyuv of chala is only the rabbanan, not the oraita. What you learn from this is that the obligation of bovo achem, which is an unusual lashon that is used by chala, as opposed to ki avo or ki tavo, that is used by all other requirements of things that only go into effect when you enter the land, By Chala it says, Bivoachem el haaretz. And Bivoachem, from that Chazal learned that the obligation starts immediately upon entering into the land. Now you would have thought that immediately upon entering the land, that that would mean immediately, even when two or three people entered the land, like the Meraglim who went to Yericho, that they would have triggered the obligation for Chala. Now it says, Bivoachem beviat kulchem, only when all of you enter into the land. So Chala has two requirements. It has a requirement of entering the land, which makes it, it's a much earlier requirement than any other mitzvah, Tuliyah Baretz, which usually kick in only after Kibush V'chiluk, as we saw by Maaseret Truma. It's also an additional requirement that it is Biat Kulchem, that all of you enter into the land. Absent that you have all of Bnei Yisrael entering into the land, you will not have Chala Deoraita. So from that, it'll end up being that even though Truma might be Chayav Midoraita, because Truma does not have that requirement of Biat Kulchem, and therefore when Ezra returned, it could trigger a necessity for Truma Midoraita, despite the fact that it's Truma Midoraita, Chala might only be Midrabanan, because you have a failure of Biat Kulchem. You don't have everyone entering into the land in order to obligate you with Chala. If you do that, then you explain Rabbi Yossi's position as being like this of Rabbi Huna Grade Rabbi Yeshua, that Truma is Midoraita, Chala is Midrabanan. If that's the case, then this Braita that you brought is not a proof to Rabbi Yossi's position vis-a-vis Truma. Because you can explain the Braita as being Chala Midrabanan, and that's why the Truma Midrabanan, which is the Dimua aspect of it, can block the obligation of Chala Midrabanan. But with regards to Truma inherently, Truma itself might be Deoraita, and therefore you don't have a proof that Rabbi Yossi really believes that Truma is Midrabanan. Now the Baalei HaTosafot ask over here, wait a minute, don't we have the Gemara in Gittin where we have a Machloket Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam with regards to Yovel? Because by Yovel it also has a requirement, you call Yosveha Aleha. You need all of its residents to be there in order for it to be classified as requiring the Yovel. Now, if you have a requirement to call Yosveha Aleha, if you qualify for Yovel, then it seems that you should qualify for Chala as well. They seem to have the same requirement, which is Piat Kuchem and call Yosveha Aleha. The problem is that in the Gemara and Gittin, the Rabbeinu Tam believes that Kol Yosveh Aleha is not a requirement that all of Bnei Yisrael return, or the majority of Bnei Yisrael return to Eretz Yisrael. Rather, it just means you need a representative from each Shevet. If you have a representative from each Shevet there, then that is sufficient grounds for starting the Yovel. And for that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam believes that in Bayit Sheni, Yovel was Midoraita. And they kept Yovel Midoraita. And he believes again that Yovel can be Doraita even possibly today if you have a representative from each Shevet. And he premises his position on what we saw with regards to Yirmiyahu and Navi bringing back the Aseret HaShvatim from Galut. And therefore there were definitely representatives of each Shevet. Rashi disagrees and says that Kol Yosveh Aleha means literally Kol Yosveh Aleha. You need the majority of Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael in order for that to be the case, based on the Gemara in Horiyot. And therefore over here, it would be the same requirement, Biat Kuchem, just like Kol Yosveh Aleha. But Tosafot asks, according to Rabbeinu Tam, who says that it's sufficient to bring in one from each Shevet, that means that why isn't this also qualified for Chala? The Gemara over here says that in the time of Ezra, it wasn't Biat Kuchem, and Chala is not qualified. So how could it be that Kol Yosveh Aleha is sufficient for the Yovel? The Tosafot says there's a difference. Kol Yosveh Aleha means less than Biat Kuchem. Biat Kuchem is a higher standard than Kol Yosveh Aleha. Kol Yosveh Aleha, according to Rabbeinu Tam, means just a representative from each Shevet. Biat Kuchem means literally the entire Bnei Yisrael, or majority of Bnei Yisrael returning to the land. And in that way, you'll differentiate the din between the din of Yovel and the din of Chala. Now, interestingly enough, and this leads to much of the controversy surrounding this din with regards to Chala, is that the Rambam, when he quotes this halacha, quotes this halacha both with regards to Chala and with regards to Truma. He quotes that the necessity for Biat Kuchem is in effect both for the issue of Chala, but he also brings it with regards to the issue of Truma. And on the spot, the Raivid says, what is he doing? How could he bring down a din that is applicable by Chala to Truma? The din of Boachem and Biat Kuchem is uniquely associated with Chala. It doesn't have anything to do with Truma. Yet the Rambam invokes it to say that Truma is Tura Midoraita and only Chayav Midrabanan bizmanazeh. So the Raivid is Mesig on the Rambam for that, and he points out that the Rambam himself, earlier, when he dealt with Shemitah and Yovel, also seems to mention the fact that the mitzvot hatzluyot v'aretz are not under that rubric of kol yoshveha aleha, and seem to have application irrespective of kol yoshveha aleha, and the fact that after Bayit Sheni, the Kedusha was a permanent Kedusha, and he points out that stira in the Rambam as well. Many tried to deal with that issue and how to reconcile between the two positions of the Rambam. But the Tor, noting that problem of the right foot, paskins against the Rambam and says that Truma Bizmanazesh should probably be Doraita versus Chala, which would be Derabanan. The Shulchan Aruch, following what he says in the Beit Yosef, goes back and says the Tor was not Mechadish anything, the right foot already said it, and the Rambam disagrees. And therefore, he paskins like the Rambam, that both Truma and Chalab is manazeh, is only midirabanan. And then the Ramah, over there, on that statement of the Shulchan Aruch, that Truma is manazeh, is midirabanan, the Ramah comments and says, v'yeshomrim, that it is d'oraita. Now, he quotes it b'shem the Tur, but the truth is that it's also the Shita d'oraivet that the Beit Yosef points out, the Tur doesn't quote, but it is the Shita d'oraivet as well, that Truma is manazeh, would be de'oraita, and it would be detached from the Kedushat Haaretz, because the Raifut believes that possibly the Kedushat Haaretz, or at least the Kedushah of Yerushalayim, was not permanent, and after the Korban HaBayit disappeared, and therefore you'll have different standards for different requirements of Kedushah, which is Shemitah and Yovot will be governed by Kol Yoshveh Aleha, Machlok and Rashi and Rebbeinu Tam as to what that requires, Chalal will be governed by Tviat Kulchem, and Truma and Maser will be governed by Vayavo, that whenever you're in the land, that a mitzvah Tuliyah Baretz will be Chayav. And therefore, you could separate between all of those items. And that leads to the question or the machloket today with regards to Trumot and Masrot as to whether they are Derabanan or Deoraita. Because, number one, are they correlated with Kedushat Haaretz? So if you correlate them with Kedushat Haaretz and you believe Kedushat Haaretz is only Derabanan, they would also be Derabanan. Meaning that if Shemitah and Yovel tells you what the status of Truma is, then they would influence Truma to be Derabanan if you believe that Yovel and Shemitah are only Midrabanan. If you believe that Truma is correlated with Chala, it also have the impact of making Truma Bizmanazeh Midrabanan. If you think Truma is independent of Chala and possibly independent of Shemitah and Yovel, then you could have Truma De'oraita Yom, and that's the view of the Raivud. So there you have a machloket in the Rishonim as to the application or the implications of what the Gemara just said. I sent out last night the Mikorot with regards to Chala and Truma Bizmanazan. You can also find them on the website. Okay, the next Mishnah begins. Mashal, Mashlu Chachamim B'Isha. Chachamim gave this parallel or parable with regards to a woman in the developmental stages of a woman. Paga, you have an unripened fig. Bochal, you have a fig that is in the process of ripening, vitzemel, and then you have a fully ripened fig. So you have these different stages with the woman in her development. Paga, odat tinoket. Like the fig that's unripened, that's when the woman is a tinoket. She's a young girl, she is a baby. That's the first stage in the woman's development. Bochal, elu yamei ne'ureha. Bochal is the period of time when she is a ne'ara. Bazu, ubazu, amru. In both the cases where she's a tinoket or a ktana, or when she reaches the age of being a nara is the period of time between the age of bat mitzvah of 12 years and one day, for the Gemara in Sanhedrin says for 6 months afterwards until she becomes a bogeret. So in that period of time when she's a ktana, as well as when she is a nara, avia zakai b'mitziyata, her father has rights to whatever mitziyot that she finds. That's mishum eva. The father is supporting the daughter. We don't want to engender disagreement or ill will between them. And therefore, the father is supporting the daughter. If she finds something, then that should accrue to the father, because if he's providing support, he should get the benefits of all the found items that she has, as well as her productivity. Whatever she works or produces or is able to create revenues from, all of that belongs to the father. And the right to be mefer and nidarim are still with the father from the youngest age until she is a gedolah, And then even when she's a gdola, as in Ne'ara, for those first 6 months, the father has all these rights in his daughter because he's providing material support to his daughter. And therefore, as a quid pro quo, all of these items belong to the father, as well as the fact that in Parshat Nidarim, it says that the father has rights of hafara. Semel, once the woman reaches full maturity, or she's fully ripe, kevin shebagra, shuvein lavia shutba. At that point, the father has no rights in his daughter whatsoever. That also has implications with regards to marriage. Whereas the father has the right to marry off his daughter, when she's a ktana, it's no question that he has the right to accept kedushin on her behalf. Mido oraita, he's the beneficiary of the monies that are paid. With regards to a bogar, it's clear he has no rights to marry her off, and he's not the beneficiary of the monies that are given. Whereas bizman ni'urim, that's a machloket tanaim as to what exactly the rights of the father are versus the woman and who has rights. Mido oraita, who has the rights to accept the kesef kedushin or to marry her off? That's discussed in the Gemara in Kiddushin. So your question is, what is the relationship between that which is being mentioned in the Mishnah and Shtei Sarot? We thought that pubic hairs were the determining factor as to whether a woman is of age or not of age. Now over here in the Gemara, we're dealing with different stages. One stage is Katana or Tinoket, which there that would not be relevant. We have the stage of Bogeret, which is a later stage, that's post-puberty. And therefore, that would not be relevant. The one case where it is relevant is by the case of Ne'urim. Because Ne'urim goes from the age of coming of age, when she reaches 12, until 12 and a half. So there should be some correlation, seemingly, between Bochal and Shtei Sarot. And that's what Rashi says in the Mishnah. Kach, k'sheyesh la siman dadim kitzat, when she has a slight indication of the development of her breasts, b'yadua she'evia Shtei Sarot. Then we know for certain that she has pubic hair. So what Rashi notes in the Mishnah is that the simanim in the Mishnah are exactly that. They are simanim. They're not the reason for her reaching the age of Ne'urim, but rather they're a siman that there is already enough maturity that you can assume she's reached the age of puberty. And again, this would be easier to check. This would be less invasive to check this rather than having to check for puberty. So if you see this type of developmental stage, then Rashi says that that's a given that if she reached the stage of Bochal, that she's also reached the stage of Shtei Sarot, that she's already reached the age of puberty. So that's the correlation between these simanim and puberty, but in the end, puberty is the determinant in terms of coming of age. Over here, we're trying to determine other stages as well, which is Ne'urim, which is correlated or is in consonance with coming of age, but then we also want Bogeret, which is a later stage, and we have to differentiate between those two stages. And the Gemara says, Ezehu simanim. What are the signs of these different stages? Rashi claims, and so does the Rambam in the Parish of Mishnayot, that Ezehu Simanim here refers to the latter of the three stages, which is Semel. Semel, which is when she's fully ripe or fully mature, that's what the Mishnah is about to list out, the Simanim of reaching that full maturity. The Baal Yad Tosafot over here disagree and say that Ezehu Simanim is for the middle stage of Bochal. That's what the Mishnah is discussing, because the Gemara later on is going to bring a whole another set of Simanim, and none of those simanim match the simanim of the Mishnah. So it's clear that the simanim and the Gemara are dealing with that latter stage of semel, of fully ripe or mature. So over here, this must be the in-between stage, that stage of the bochal. So what are those simanim? Rabbi Yosef Glili Omer, Mishale Hakemet Tachad Adad, when there is a fold or a wrinkle under the breast. That's already a developmental stage that tells you that she has reached, according to Rashi and the Rambam, full maturity. According to the Baal Yad Tosafot, means that she's reached the stage of Narut, that she's reached the stage of Bochal. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Mishiatu Adadim. It's when the breasts already begin to hang down. That's when you reach that stage. Ben Azai Omer, Mishiashchir Hapitomet. It is when the ring around the nipple starts to darken. That is when you've reached this stage. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kadesh Teino Yado Ala Oketz, Ushokea. It's a stage by which, if you press on the nipple, it does not rebound very quickly, but it rebounds in a slow fashion. That is the threshold for whichever stage you think the Mishnah is speaking about. That is determined by that test. So now the Gemara goes and explains these different stages of the Mishnah. Paga is odatinoket. When it is unripe, immature, she is called a tinoket kidichtiv. They're giving you the background for what the word means. The teina, the fig, has the fruits have emerged. I mean, the blossom has dropped and the fruit is emerging. That's called chanta pageha. That is the beginning or the emergence of the unripened fruit. That's the meaning of the word paga. Bochal, elu yimei ni'urim. The bochal refers to that middle stage. It is partially ripe but not fully ripe. And that refers to the yimei ni'urim, which is from the time that she's 12 until she's 12 and a half, which she is beginning to mature, but she hasn't reached full maturity. Because it's not. Hatzeinim mishid yavchilu. That when it comes to the chiyuv of trumot and masrot, that the chiyuv of teinim starts, or the threshold is when yavchilu, when they reach this stage of maturity. Va'amar Rabba Bar Chana, amar Rab mishiyal bin rosheheh. That stage is reached when they already are starting to turn white at their heads, meaning that there's a beginning of a change, but it's not the complete change or the complete maturity. So here too, by the woman, you're going to have developmental stages that indicate maturity or leading to full maturity, but she hasn't reached full maturity. Just like by the figs, they've now changed what they originally were, but they haven't reached their final stage of ripeness. Some say from here, Vatikzar nafshi bahem, v'gam nafsham bachalabi, that I was already short with them, I had enough with them, and also their nafsham bachalabi were repulsive to me. And as Rashi explains over here, that when a person has an aversion to something, they overstate its size. When something bothers you, even though it's a small item that's bothering you, you make the problem outsized because of the fact that it's bothering you. And that's what it means over here. Gam nafsham bachalabi, that also their nafsham were repulsive to me. Or the other way to read it is that they were repulsed by my behavior towards them. Either way, it's an interaction by which bachala, you are repulsed, you are disgusted by something, and therefore you now assign a greater size to the item because it bothers you. So you overstate the size of the problem because of the fact that it bothers you. And so too, bachala means something that is bigger. It's not paga anymore. It's something that has grown. It's something that has developed, but it's not fully mature. Semel, as the Mishnah says, is kaman damar yatzta mleya. It is as if it's an acronym. Yatzta mleya, that it has reached full maturity. It has reached full development. And that is the three mashalim that were given in the Mishnah. For the woman, you have a fully unripe, immature girl, which is a tinoket ektana, which is pageha. You have the bochal, which is the in-between stage, where she is beginning to develop, but is not fully developed, or when the fruit has begun to change, but it hasn't fully changed into its full maturity. And then you have the tzemel, which is complete maturity, fully ripe, which would be the status of a woman when she is a bogeret, when she's reached the full age of maturity. Reza simanim, the Mishnah quotes the simanim, Rabbi Yosef Li Omer Mishaleh Kemet, Amar Shmuel. Lo mishyaleh kemet mamash. That which Rabbi Yosef Glili said in the Mishnah, that there is a wrinkle or a fold under the breast, doesn't mean literally that there's a wrinkle or fold under the breast. El kadesh takzir yadeh le'achorea, that if she was to pull her hands back, v'nirit kemishyaleh kemet tacharadad. And that causes it to make there, as if there's an appearance of a wrinkle or a fold under the breast. It seems to be from what Shmuel is describing over here, that he's giving an earlier stage in this. It doesn't have to be that she has her arms close together, but even when her arms are pulled back, for some reason that would then stretch the breasts and cause them to fold over or cause a fold or a wrinkle under them, that is even enough of a stage to be considered ne'urim. So he's saying an earlier time. Shmuel badok ba'amte. Shmuel, in order to learn or to understand the developmental stages of a woman, was checking his young maidservant as she went through these developmental stages. He would have her appear before him so that he could check it. And he paid her money for the embarrassment she underwent, having Shmuel check her out for these developmental stages, and gave her 4 zuz. Shmuel itamei. Shmuel is the shitato. The damar Shmuel. Shmuel says with regards to an Eved Kanani and a Shifcha Kananit, that the olam bahem tavodu. Pasuk says with regards to the Eved Kanani and the Shifcha Kananit, that there's a requirement that you enslave them permanently. That is the isur of releasing an Eved Kanani or a Shifcha Kananit from bondage comes from this Pasuk of the olam bahem tavodu. that they should always remain enslaved to you. And that's why they're treated like property. They're passed from father to son. They are given as a Yerusha, and they're treated like any other piece of property. There's a requirement for Tavodu. But Shmuel learns from that, it's Mintayek out of that, Lavudanitatim, below the Busha, that you have a right in terms of using them or utilizing them for work. You do not have a right to mistreat them. You do not have a right to embarrass them. They are human beings, and therefore they have to be treated in that manner. And that's why Shmuel, the Shitato, believed that if he used the maidservant to learn and it was an embarrassment for her, he had to compensate her for that embarrassment because he didn't have a right to her embarrassment. He had to pay her for it. Vali Tosafot point out that it's a little bit circular because Mashikana Evet Kana Rabo. And the truth is that the maid Boshet of an Evet or an Ama belongs to her owner. And Shmuel is her owner over here. So the money that he's giving to her really belongs to him, and he didn't need to pay her anyway. But the Vali Tosafot say, let's say Kidei Shamayim. He wanted to be Yotzei Bidei Shamayim. He says in the end, you caused embarrassment to this young lady. Yes, from a monetary standpoint, the money belongs to you, and you wouldn't have to give it, but nevertheless, when you come up to Shemayim, they're going to say you embarrassed another person and you never dealt with it. So he, let's say Yidei Shemayim, pays this woman to be sure that he is not in violation of causing the boshet, and he compensates her for that boshet. Shmuel miyached lehem. Therefore, Shmuel, based on his shita, would provide for an Eved Kenani and a Shifcha Kenani a spouse. He would have them marry and be monogamous in their relationships and develop families. So he would make sure that he found an Eved Kenani for his Shifcha Kenani and a Shifcha Kenani for his Eved Kenani and have them get married. Rav Nachman machliv lehem. Rav Nachman used to swap them out, meaning that he used to have his slave be together with one Shifcha Kenani and then change it to another one. He didn't believe that there was any necessity to have them in marriage or monogamous relationships. It also seems to be that he doesn't have, believe that there's any requirement of not embarrassing them either, and therefore he's not worried about switching them around, and ein makbira boshtam. Rav Sheshet masar lahem naravi. Rav Sheshet used to just let them go out and be free and licentious in their behavior as long as it was with a non-Jew. Rav lahem is darum Yisrael. He says to the Shifcha Kenanit, don't get involved with the Jewish men. You can do whatever you want with the non-Jewish men. Basically, he was, as the Rashi says over here, mafkir lehu. He would be mafkir shifchotav laravim, noeg behem minag hefker. They have no consideration about their marriage, even keeping together with an Eved Kenani, but he would just let them go free and act in any licentious way that they chose, as long as they didn't get involved with the Jewish men. So you here have three different views as to how to deal with slaves and how to deal with your Eved Kenani or Shifcha Kenani. You have Shmuel who's treating them with a sense of dignity, a sense of mishpacha, busha. They have an entitlement to be treated like human beings, and therefore their busha is important. And that's what the Gemara said, that Shmuel Tamei paid off this Shifcha Kenanit for using her in order to learn the developmental stages of a young lady. And then you have here Rav Nachman, who's an in-between stage, who doesn't worry about their busha, but still not mafkir lehu. And then you have Rav Sheshet, who's completely mafkir lehu. And that's probably a different view as to whether the slave is considered to be more human or more property. Where along that continuum do you find the slave? It's clear that in terms of rights and in terms of Yerusha, they were treated like property. But that doesn't mean that they as themselves, as human beings, are property. And that's really the machloket over here between these different Amoraim as to how to treat an Eved Kenani or Shifcha Kenani is related to how you think of them as property versus how much they are still human beings, even though they're classified as property for ownership rights. Tosafot concludes from Rav Sheshet's behavior that a Shifcha Kenanit is therefore muteret with an Oved Kochavim, and vice versa, an Eved Kenani is mutar be'ovedet Kochavim. And even though they have partial chiyuva mitzvot, and they're partially converted, and they would have to keep the mitzvot, things like nida and ishidish, which would have application to them, midoraita, nevertheless, they don't have the obligation to marry somewhat of a like kind, another shifcha kananit, or a shifcha kananit to an evet ivri. They don't have that obligation, and they may marry non-Jewish partners, non-Jewish spouses, as is seen here by Rav Sheshet being mafkir them to an Aravi, and not thinking that that is problematic. Now, Rav Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says in the Mishnah, as we saw before, that the test has to do with the pressing the nipple and seeing the rebound of the nipple. Where it says, my oketz, what is the oketz? Amar Shmuel, okso sheldat. It is the oketz of the breast, meaning that it's that point that comes out, which is the nipple. Tan Rabbanan, Eluhen simanei bagrut. These are the simanim of the bagrut. This is what drives the Balei Tosafot to say our Mishnah can't be talking about simanei bagrut, because over here we have a braita that brings simanei bagrut, and none of them match that which is in the Mishnah. And therefore he believes the Mishnah is talking about the simanim for bochal or for narut, and these are the simanim of bagrut. Mishit kashkashu hadadim. So there are two ways to describe this. The word kishkush means to make noise or to shake. So he can either be saying mishit kashkashu hadadim means when the breasts start to have movement, they have enough heft in them that they move. Or mit kashkashu can mean from the word kasheh, when they harden or they become more firm. That's what he's describing over here. Yochanan bebroko omer mishiyaksif rosh hachotem. So that it's a case where the tip of the nose either darkens or becomes whiter. Achotem sounds like the tip of the breast, which most would translate as the tip of the nipple or the center of the breast. It's not clear which they're speaking to, but either one. If you're talking about the center of the breast, it might be talking about darkening. But if it's talking about the tip of the nipple, it might be that it's becoming whiter or paler. And the Gemara says, Mishiyachsif azkenala. To get to that point, she's already much older. That's not the threshold for a bogeret. Ella amarabashi mishapsil rosh achotem. It is when the head of the nipple opens or cracks, which is either that the hole in the nipple develops fully, or the center of the area appears wrinkled or folded. So depending again, if you're speaking about the nipple itself, then the tip of the nipple would have been white before. Now he's saying you don't need to go that far. It just needs to be the development of the crack or the hole in the nipple. If you think it's the ring or the center of the breast, then either it was that it darkened in that area. Over here it's saying that either that it has already become to the point where the center appears a little wrinkled or a little tighter over there. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Mishitakif, Ha'atara. So that it's a case where the oketz, as Rashi says over here, becomes gadol, ve'av, umukaf atara. That the nipple itself becomes big, it becomes thick, and it's now surrounded by a crown. It has a ring around it as well. Rabbi Shimon Omer, mishenit ma'ech, hakaf. It's when the kaf becomes softer, and as the kaf over here, as the Gemara is going to explain in 1 second, is the mons veneris. V'chena Rabbi Shimon by Yochai Omer, Shlosha simanim natnu chachamim biisha milamata ukenegdam milamalo. The chachamim gave 3 simanim below with the woman that have a coincident stage up above, which is paga milamalo. When you have the stage of paga up above, biadua shlo via shtei tzarot. There you know for sure she hasn't reached the age of puberty. As we said before in the Mishnah, paga is a tinoket. That's the unripened, the undeveloped young girl that she's a ktana. Bochal milamalo. If you reach the stage of bochal, biyadua shevia shtei tzarot. That's what we noted in the Mishnah that Rashi said, that this stage of bochal indicates that she's reached puberty and that she is now a ne'ara. Semel milamalo. You reach fio maturity or ripening up above, which we just saw in the bright, all the different stages that were indicated for that. And according to Rashi and the Rambam, that's also what's mentioned in the Mishnah. Although according to the Tosafot, the simanim of the Mishnah are the bochal. Biyadua shenimaei hakaf. You know that the kaf, the spoon, the ladle has softened, which is the stage that was just indicated by Shimon before, that nitmaei hakaf is an indication of bagrut. May I ask my kaf? What is this spoon or ladle? Amrabiuna makom tafuach yesh lamala mioto makom. The woman has above the area of her genitalia, she has a area that is rounded or looks like it's a little bit swollen. Kamen shemigadelet, once she grows up, when she matures, mitmaech veolech. It becomes softer and it has more give to it. And that's what's being referred to here. And again, the medical term for it is the mons veneris. It is the area where there's a rounded shape or a ladle-like shape to the woman below her stomach, above the area of her private parts. that area is rounded and that area is fully developed and softened in terms of being fully developed, that is an indication of bagrut, and that is correlated or coincident with her fully ripening or maturing above when she reaches the point of semel up above by her breasts. So now Gemara says, Shalu it Rabbi, halacha kedivrei mi. Who is the halacha like in this case? You have so many different opinions as to the stages of development. Shalach lo kedivrei kulan lahachmir. Like all of them, lahachmir. First of all, the Balei Tosafot already noted this back on Daf Lamed Vav. Other Rishonim, like the Rashba, noted over here. Tosafot points you to the Tosafot back on Lamed Vav where he said it. He says that this isn't a problem of paskening like everyone the Achmir, which the Mishnah and the Gemara say is inappropriate. If you hold like a Mandamar, you have to like hold of them. If you do everything the Achmir, that's a foolish pursuit. That's a silly way to go around Piskei Halacha. So Tosafot says that's only when you know what the Halacha is and you decide to go the Achmir in two contradictory or mutually exclusive opinions. Over here, the problem is we don't know who to pasken like, and therefore to go the Achmir and be Choshesh for all the opinions, b'safek, that's a proper form of psak, or that is a way to deal with the halachic issue. And that's what we do over here. We do everybody l'chumra. What that means, Rashi over here believes, ezu me'elu shetavid, according to Rashi means, if you bring any of these signs, her father is no longer allowed to be mayfair her nidarim. We are machzikar to be a bogeret, meaning that her father loses right with any one of these signs. Then he brings itamre. So some say l'achmir, is that she can't be made do miyun anymore once she has one of these simanim, but she can't do chalitza, or chalitza is not effective on her until she has all of those signs. And Rashi says, v'lav milti, that explanation is incorrect, because the issue of miyun is determined by the threshold of shtei sarot, or coming of age. The simanim that were given over here were simanim for reaching bogeret, which is a stage way later than already reaching of age. It's at least 6 months later where she reaches to be a bogeret. He says, if you want to say it, then the way to say it is this, that halacha kedivrei kulam nachmir is that if she has any one of these simanim and she doesn't have all of them, then she is classified in terms of being a bogeret. So she accepted kiddushim, her father accepted kiddushim. If she has all of the simanim, then the father's kiddushim is meaningless, because she's clearly a bogeret and she's on her own reconnaissance. If she has any one of the simanim, then you have a chashash, because maybe the father's already knocked out of the picture, but maybe she's also in the picture, or maybe she's not ready to be in the picture, she's not a full bogeret. So from the time she reaches any one of these simanim, it'll be a safek if the father accepts kiddushin on her behalf, or if she accepts kiddushin on her own behalf. Once you hit one of these simanim, that'll be a safek. Once you get all of the simanim, that safek goes away, and she clearly can accept on her own behalf and her father cannot. And that is what it means, lachmir, that we worry of both of them. And then you could also then have it be explanation of the Mishnah, which is the items in the Mishnah that are belonging to the father, including the Avedah, Maseya Deha, and the Hafarat Nidareah. When she hits any one of these, Simanim of Bogeret, that takes her out of the world of Ni'ureha, and therefore the father does not have an absolute right to them. It becomes a Safek. Once she reaches all of these developmental stages and is fully mature, the father has no rights in those items anymore. So again, it can generate a safek for the items that are in the Mishnah along that same line, according to the way Rashi explains it, that the simanim in the Mishnah were simanim for bagrut, and therefore that could have implications for the Mishnah as well. Whereas for the Balei Tosafot that say that the simanim in the Mishnah are simanei narut, then the area that Rashi rejected could be the explanation, which is miyun and chalitza, which are determined by shtei sarot, reaching puberty, which if you say in the Mishnah, the simanim are simanim of narut, that would be exactly what you're looking for, and therefore it would be what Rashi rejected would be the explanation of the Mishnah. If you say kulan achmir, according to the Balei Tosafot, which is when she hits one of those simanim, she can no longer do miyun, chalitza will not necessarily be effective until she has all of those simanim. But Papa, Rav Chinina, Breid Ravika, Chad Matnei Aha, V'chad matni achatzer tzurit. So this statement of Rabbi, where he says kedibrei kulam nachmir, Rav Papa and Rav Chinina Gabrei Davika argued about this. One of them had the statement of Rabbi associated with our Mishnah or our Braita that we brought over here. One of them had it associated with a different Mishnah that deals with a chatzer tzurit. Ditznan ezuhu chatzer shechayevet b'matzer. What is a chatzer that has an obligation with regards to the din of maaser. Rabbi Shimon Omer, chaser hatzurit. That is like a chaser hatzurit, shakelim nishmarim bitocha. That the kelim are guarded inside of there, and they are protected. What the Mishnah is speaking about is the obligation of maaser that is associated with riyat p'nei abayit. That when you bring in maaser from the field or truma from the field, you reach what's called gemar malocha when you do miruach hakri, when you smooth out the pile after all the processing. If you don't intend to bring that grain into the house and to utilize it yourself, but rather to sell it or to use it for planting out in the field, that already brings on the obligation of trumot ha-masrot. If you intend to bring it into the house to be used in the house, then that truma maser does not become fully chayav in trumot ha-masrot ad riyat pnei abayit, until it sees the entrance or goes through the entrance of the house. There is a machloket as to whether a chatzer can function as the entrance to the house or is classified as riyat pnei habayit. And that's what's being discussed over here, which is, what is a chatzer that's qualified to be classified as riyat pnei habayit? And you can see in the Bali Tosafot, Tosafot brings problem, kasha l'Rabbeinu Tam, that the Gemara in Bava Metzia has a machloket amoraim with regards to whether riyat chatzer is sufficient. And Rabbi Yanai over there says that tevel is not chayv in maser until it enters the house. The chatzer is not a threshold by which it makes it chayav in maser. So how is Rabbi Yanai going to deal with the Mishnah over here that we're quoting? He says that's different between midoraita and midorabanan, which is the machloket in Bava Metzia revolves around whether a chatzer obligates you in trumat maser midoraita or midorabanan. Rabbi Yanai says it's only midorabanan. In order to be chayav doraita, you need riyat pnei abayit. The dissenting opinion in Bava Metzia believes that even the chatzer itself can make you chayav midoraita. So the Mishnah says your chayav is according to all the opinions over here. That when you reach the chatzer, it's only a question according to those opinions whether it's a chiyuv doraita or a chiyuv dirabanan. And so Rabbi Shimon explains to us that this chatzer tzuri qualifies as a chatzer that would be the same as riyat pnei abayit. And the Gemara asks, my chatzer tzurit. What exactly is this chatzer tzurit that's being noted by Rabbi Shimon that qualifies for being a chatzer that is equivalent to riyat pnei abayit? Amar Rabbi Barchana, Rabbi Yochanan. It's because in Tyre, when they have chatzerim like that, they sit a shomer. They have a guard at the door. They have a doorman at the door to the chatzer. And therefore, that which is inside is protected because of the fact that you have somebody guarding or watching over their chatzer. That's the type of chatzer that is the same din as riyat pnei abayit. If the case of the chatzer is a case where one person opens it up and another person locks it up or closes it, meaning that there isn't a shomer at the doorway to the chatzer to open and close it, but rather this guy opens it, this one locks it, there's no identifiable or defined person that is the sole controller of the entrance to the area, then that is patur. That's not considered to be a chatzer shamur sufficiently to be a chatzer for riyat pnei abayit. Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, Kol Shein Adam Bosh Lechol B'Tocha Chayevet. So Rabbi Nechemiah says that if you can eat in the chatzer and not be embarrassed because there's enough privacy in the chatzer that you feel comfortable eating over there, and that would not be a front to your etiquette by eating in the chatzer, then that is chayav, because that's a chatzer that's sufficiently shamur. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kol Shein Nechatnasim La Be'emirim Rim Lo Ma'atam Vakesh Turah. Anytime that if a person comes in there and somebody doesn't ask them, what are you doing here? That is patur, because that's a chatzer that is too open. That's a chatzer that's too freewheeling, because people enter and you have no idea where they are, but nobody questions their being there. That means that it's not secure, it's not protected. If they ask you what you're doing there when you shouldn't be there, then that's an indication that somebody's keeping the eye out, or they know who belongs there, and people don't just walk in there willy-nilly. If you have two chatzerot, you have a courtyard and then another courtyard behind that courtyard, then hapnimit chayevet, the inner courtyard is chayevet in trumot masrot, kitzunah patura, and the outer one is patur, because the outer one is exposed to all these things that we're speaking about here in terms of the shuta rabim and people entering and exiting. The inner one is considered to be much more private, because even if people enter the outer one, they don't feel free to enter into the inner chatzer, the inner courtyard. Shaluid Rabbi Aloch Kedibreid Mi. Who's Aloch alike? Here we have a number of Tanaim defining what is considered to be a chatzer that is private enough to warrant or to obligate one in Trumot HaMasrot as if it's Riyat Bnei HaBayit. If some of them stating in the negative what is not considered to be a Chatzer, some of them stating it in the positive as to what is considered to be a Chatzer Shemur, who is Allah Alay? Amar Lo, Allah could be a Kulam Nachmir. Allah is like all of them Lehachmir, which means that we're going to say that if you have any one of these items in the list of Tanaim over here, that would be sufficient grounds to make you chayav in Trumot or Masrot. Then Rashi brings a Lishna Achrina. The lowest standard would be that if you're willing to eat there and not be embarrassed, that's enough to make it into chatzer that's chayav in Trumot and Masrot. On the other hand, to make you chayav midoraita in Trumot Masrot, or to be fully sure that you're chayav in Trumot Masrot, it would have to be a chatzer in which you have all of the qualifications that we have above. Which means that when it enters already and you have any the lowest common denominator, which is the ability to eat there in private, that'd be enough to say you can't eat it without taking off Trumot HaMasrot. On the other hand, if you use this as tevel to take off from other tevel, or use other tevel to take off from this, you need to have all the qualifications in order to be sure that it's real tevel midoraita and you're really chayav. You need all the qualifications over here to have it match up with other tevel midoraita. That's another way to formulate the chumrah over here according to Rashi, which is that you have two stages. You have a stage where you're chayav on these fruits in particular, and then you have another stage where these fruits are so chayav that they can be intermingled with other fruits that are chayavim. All right, next Mishnah. Bat esrim shana shelo hevia shtei sarot. A 20-year-old has yet to reach puberty. Tavi raya shehi bat esrim shana. She has to bring proof that she is 20 years old. Ve'ailonit, and that she is unable to bear children. Therefore, lo choletzet v'lo mitya bemet. And therefore, she will not have to perform yibum, and she also will not have to have chalitza performed with her. She brings evidence to the fact that she's unable to bear children, which is one of the requirements for yibum, because v'haya b'chor ashet teleid, that the child that is born from this wedlock of yibum, that that child will then be lakim lachim shem b'Yisrael. So that's only true if she can bear children. If she can't bear children, there's no necessity or no reason to have the Yibum. And therefore, if she can prove that she can't bear children, then she's exempt from Yibum, but she's also exempt from Chalitza. She doesn't need either one of those requirements. Ben Esrim Shana, Shaloi Vishte Sarot, a man who reaches the age of 20, who has yet to reach puberty, Yavi Uraya Shehu Ben Esrim Shana. They bring a proof that he's 20 years old, Behusaris, and he is impotent. Lo choleitz v'lo miyabein. He doesn't perform chalitza, and he doesn't perform yibum with the brother's wife. Elu divrei Beit Hillel. This is the view of Beit Hillel. So again, the same requirement is that he has to be lakim, lachim shem. The only way that he is relevant in the world of yibum is if he can be making a shame for his brother. It means that he can have children or bear children. If he's unable to bear children, there's no heter dispensation for him to be together with his brother's wife and form Yibum, because there's no mitzvah of Yibum anymore. Now the Mishnah uses the plural Yavil. Rashi's Medayek from that Yavil means the relatives of the woman are bringing the proof to exempt her from having to do Yibum or Chalitza, and that is because they want to free this woman from having to deal with this individual, so they're coming to the protection of her, and that's why it says Yavil. Tosafot over here says that there were a number of different words that are used here, and depending on which one is used, or the girsa that you have, will determine who's bringing the proof. It says, if it says Yaviu in the plural, like we just said, that means the Krove Aisha. That's the way Rashi explained it, was Medayek out of her Mishnah. It says, if the girsa is Tavi, means that she herself will bring the proof that she doesn't need to have Yibum with this guy. Or if it says Yavi, it means he himself will bring the proof that he shouldn't perform Yibum over here, and he will show that she's in Ailonit, that she is actually Dushay Taot, and therefore he can marry her sister. There are a number of factors over here as to why any individual would not want Yibum or Chalitza performed. So from the man's perspective, he may not want to perform Yibum with this woman if she is in Ailonit, because if he has Yibum with this woman, it will preclude him from marrying her sister. But if he proves that she's an Ailonit, and the original marriage to his brother was a problematic marriage, it was a Kedushay Taot, and it's undermined from the outset, then he could marry her sister, or he could marry her mother. So if that was something that he had interest in, then he would have a vested interest in showing that she's an Ailonit. So depending on which verb is used in the Mishnah, will determine who's bringing the proof over here. And each one of them might have a vested interest in these situations to either protect the woman, to protect the man, to allow the man to marry certain individuals, to allow the woman to marry certain individuals, or to free her of having to do chalitza or yibum. And that will depend on whether it says, in our Mishnah we have Tavi in the first case, and we have Yaviu in the second case. Tosva notes that there was also a third gear, so they had Yavi, and each one of those would be indicative of who is bringing the proof over here. Beit Shammai omrim zevezeh ben shmonasre. Whatever Beit Hillel said is not true at 20, it's true at the age of 18. 18 is the threshold for determining whether an individual is not able to bear children if they have yet to reach puberty by that age. Rabbi Eliezer omer, hazachar kedivrei Beit Hillel. For males, it's 20. Benekeva kedivrei Beit Shammai. And for females, it's 18 like Beit Shammai. Shaisha memaheret lavo mipnaish. Women mature faster than men. That's also the reason why the threshold for of age or puberty for women is 12 and for men it's 13. That was the machloket that we saw previously in the Gemara. But the view of Rabbi is that way. And similarly over here, the view of Rabbi Eliezer is the same with regards to the developmental stages of a man and a woman, that the woman is maturing faster. And therefore at 18, you can already determine if she hasn't reached puberty that there's something wrong. By a man, you need to wait to the age of 20 to determine that they haven't reached puberty and there's something wrong. Biramini, echad ben teisha shanim yom echad, echad ben esrim shlo hevi shtei sarot. Doesn't matter whether they're 9 years old or they're 20 years old. If they have yet to reach puberty, then that is an indication that they are still ketanim, which means that a 9-year-old and a 20-year-old have the same din, which is if they don't have shtei sarot, they haven't reached puberty, then they're treated like a katan. If that's the case, then when they reach the age of 20, it sounds like you have to keep waiting to determine whether they are a gadol or not. That's different than our Mishnah. It says that 20 is already the cutoff. If they reach 20 and they don't have shtei sarot, they're already a gadol, but they're a gadol who is a saris or an ilonit, and they've reached a new threshold. In this braita, it seems like, even when you reach the age of 20, that's just an indication you're katani, you have to keep waiting. So I'm Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, I'm a rab, but who should know the both simanai saris? The difference between the bright and our Mishnah is whether there are other indications of the individual being impotent, whether that's for the man a saris, for the isha being an ilonit, which is that the Gemara in Perakah Harel in Yevamot describes what are other indications or simanim of an individual who is a saris. And the Gemara says, Amarava dekanami, our Mishnah is miduyak like that, diktani behu saris. Says in our Mishnah that he is Esrim Shana, Vehu Saris. How do you know he's a Saris when he reached 20? Must be that there are other Simanim that are there. So age of 20 is a threshold when you have other indications besides the absence of puberty. Other Simanim together with the absence of puberty, that's an indication that the person is already a Gadol, but they are impotent. Or that they are a woman who is fully mature. She's a Gdolah, but she is an Ilonit. That's true if you have age and simanim. But if you have just age, then that's not enough. Shmamina, that's the braita that says that age just makes it, if you don't have puberty, you're still a katan, and we wait. V'chilo no dolo simani saris ad kama. So then when is the cutoff for the braita? The braita says when you don't have simani saris, you just keep waiting if they haven't reached puberty. So tani rabchia ad rov shnotav. Until you reach the majority of his age, in their day, and the pasuk in Tehillim that we call Yemesh Notam Shivim Shana, that the person's lifespan is around 70 years, and therefore we pass an halacha that Rosh Notav Shel Adam is when he crosses over the threshold of 35. So once you cross the age of 35, an individual who has yet to show signs of puberty by the age of 35, even though they have no other corroborating simanim, then they're declared to be a saris, or for a woman, she'll be an ilonit. Whereas if they show other simanim that corroborate the lack of reaching puberty, then even at earlier ages, we will make that determination. At the earliest, the age of 20, according to Beit Hillel, 18, according to Beit Shammai, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, 20 for a man, 18 for a woman. Kiyatu kamei de Rabbi Chia, or the other girsa over here is Rava. When these individuals who had yet to show signs of puberty came before them, ikachish, if they were weak, amalu avriua. Fatten them up. Make them healthy. E bari, if they were very healthy or they were very fat, amarlo akshua. Skinny them out or make them weak. Dahani simanim. These simanim. Zimnin da'atu machmar tichushuta. Sometimes they emerge because the individual is weak. Sometimes they come out because the person is very healthy. So what Rava or Rabbi Chiya, depending on who is the author of this position, is trying to do is trying to determine whether the lack of puberty over here is really a problem of health, or is it a problem indicating that this is a sris or an ayoni? The way to check that is to change their status of health, is to change them from being very fat or healthy to weaker and less healthy, or vice versa. Tosafot has like an inverse gears over here, which is that these types of health issues cause the simanim to fall out. And therefore, maybe weakness caused the simanim to fall out, so make them healthy and they won't fall out, or vice versa. So the way that Rashi is interpreting is that the change in the status or the health of the individual might cause the simanim to emerge. Tosafot seems to indicate that it might prevent the simanim from disappearing when you have them in the other state, whether it's healthy or unhealthy or skinny or fat. Amarav Ilkata Vikule Pirka Me 8 Rav says in the entire perek, this perek in Nidat, Yotze Dofen, anytime an age is mentioned in the Mishnayot, it means Me'eit Le'eit, it means until that period fully. Vula Amar, it's not. Whatever is mentioned in the Mishnah, it has to go to full duration, that's true. The Lotznan, what's not written is not written. Now, in our Mishnayot beforehand, many of the Mishnayot mentioned age thresholds of 12 years and one day, 13 years and one day. That is clearly to the full completion of that cycle. Meaning that when you say 13 years and one day, that means you completed 13 years and you've entered into your 14th year. 12 years and one day means you completed your 12 years, went into one day. Our Mishnah over here mentions the age of 18 and 20, but does not say Yom Echad afterwards. In this case, 18 and 20, does that mean until you completed 18 years? Until you've completed 20 years? As if it's written 18 years in one day, 20 years in one day. Or maybe this is a different definition. Here it means into your 18th year, into your 20th year. So Rav believes that this Mishnah is no different than all the other Mishnayot, and it means till you completed entirely the age range that you're speaking about here. It means you've finished 18 years, you've finished 20 years. On the other hand, Ula is saying that that's true in the other Mishnayot. They require 12 years in one day, 13 years in one day, 3 years in one day, 9 years in one day, everything that we mentioned until now. Our Mishnah that doesn't mention the one day means into your 18th year, into your 20th year. So now Gemara says, Bish l'malo Ula. According to Ula, I understand. That explains why in the other Mishnayot it wrote Yom Echad after the ages. Nobir did it, because there's a difference. Elo the Rav, Litne. According to Rav, why is the presentation of the ages over here different than every other Mishnah? Va'ol Tani Rabbi Yossi ben Kiper Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Shnat Etzrim Shiatzu Mimenu Shloshim Yom. The 20th year, when you enter your 20th year that has already had 30 days elapsed in it, Harik Shnat Etzrim Lechol Devarea. That's as if you're 20 for everything that is a requirement of 20. V'chein Hore Rabbi Belod. And Rabbi and Lod also gave the same psak. Shnat Shmonatzre Shiatzu Mimenu Shloshim Yom. The 18th year, which already has 30 days elapsed from it, it's as if you are 18 for everything. Meaning that it's clear here, the explanations of the Braitot that we're bringing, that are referenced to our Mishnah, and Rabbi Leizer's opinion in our Mishnah, clearly state that 18 and 20 does not mean the completion of the 18th year, the 20th year, rather only 30 days into either one of those years. So, Bishlama de Rabbi Udrabi Yossi ben Kiper, Lokasha. Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi ben Kiper, the machloka between them is not a problem, because haka beit shemai, haka beit hillel. One of them is using beit shemai's opinion that 18 is the threshold, and one of them is using beit hillel's threshold, which is 20. Ela l'rav, kasha. According to Rav, that's a problem, because what is the beginning of the 18th year and the beginning of the 20th year have any relevance, according to Rav? So these Tanaim, their interpretation of 18 and 20 is very different than Rav. So Gemara says, Tanaihi, it is a machloket, Tanaim, and Rav subscribes to the other Tanaim. The Tanya, Shana Hamura B'Kodoshim, Shana Hamura B'Batei Arei Choma, Shtei Shanim Shebistei Achuza, Shei Shanim Shebe'Evet Ivri, V'Chein Shebe'Ben V'Shebat, Kulan Mi'Eit Le'Eit. When it comes to the counting of years with regards to these halakot, when it comes to Kodoshim, when you have a requirement that the animal be in its first year of life, Ben Shana, or Ben Shtei Shanim, or Ben Shalosh Shanim, That means, it means a full year. It means from time that it was born to that time returning to complete a full year. That is also true by Batei Arei Choma, whereby if you sell a house in a walled city, you have exactly 1 year to redeem it. If you don't, the sale is permanent. That 1 year also is a year in its fullest sense. Shtei Shanim Shvei Achuza, when you sell a sadeh to someone in the time that the Yovel is in effect, then that field will return to you in the Yovel. You're allowed to redeem it any time before the Yovel by subtracting the number of years that it was utilized from the number of years that remain until the Yovel and determining what the price is relative to the Yovel. In essence, when somebody buys a field in the time of the Yovel, they're really leasing it from you for the number of years that remain until the Yovel. And that means there's a price per year of the lease, and you can redeem it based on that price. But there is a rule that you may not redeem it within the first 2 years of this sale. Those 2 years are determined May 8th. Sheshanim and Eved Ivri, the 6 years that an Eved Ivri has to work for you, are determined by the time he starts working from you, and you count 6 years from then, not based on the fixed calendar. Similarly, male or female, when they're coming of age, when they reach the age of 12 or 13, is determined by their birthday, not determined by the calendar. May 8th applies to all of these individuals. May 8th, as Rashi says over here, May 8th is miyom liyom, from day to day, means a full year. Now, in some of these items, as the Gemara noted already, we saw this in Bechorot and other places, that with regards to Kodoshim and with regards to Batei Arei Choma, the rule is there that it is May 8th, literally, from hour to hour. That you have to know the hour that the animal was born. Then the cycling or determining of its age is based on hour to hour. And same with Batei Arei Choma. For the other items in the list over here, it's enough to reach or complete the day. For instance, a child that is 12 years old, then they have to finish their 12th year. As soon as they enter into the first day of their 13th year, that girl has now reached of age and is bat mitzvah. And you don't have to wait until the exact hour that they were born. That is the consensus of most of the Achronim. The Divrei Chamudot, on the other hand, thinks that the same is true by bar and bar mitzvah. You have to actually wait until the exact hour of May 8th in order for it to work, like it seems to say in this brayta over here. Now Rashi, in explaining what the options are, says one option is that you do it May 8th, which means that you go and use full, complete years based on the birth or the starting point of any particular item that's listed in this brayta. The other option is with that you would follow the Minyan Olam, that you would follow the calendar of the world. And that means when you cross over Rosh Hashanah, that would already be a year. Just like when you count the years of reign of a king. For Jewish kings, it's Nisan. For non-Jewish kings, it's Tishrei. They start to rule days before the threshold point, then that counts as their first year. When they cross over Rosh Hashanah for a non-Jewish king, Nisan for a Jewish king, then they begin their second year of reign. You would have thought similarly with regards to the birthdays of an individual and all these other factors that are mentioned here, that if they're born a little bit before Rosh Hashanah, they already be in their second year of life as soon as they cross over Rosh Hashanah. That's the other alternative that Rashi offers. I will discuss that more in detail in tomorrow, because Rashi, the Shittato, throughout this whole Gemara here, from Daf Mendal all the way through Memchet, as well as Rashi's Perush and Chumash, consistently thinks that that's the case, that Rosh Hashanah is the cutoff, and a person's age is determined by Rosh Hashanah and not by their birthday. And that's what Rashi seems to indicate here as the alternative to the Me'eid in the Brayta over here. Now the Gemara brings the proofs to each one of the items that listed in the Brayta. Shana Amar Rabbi Kodeshim Nolan. How do we know that's the case? Amar Abacha Bar Yaakov Amar Kra Keves Ben Shnato. It says that it has to be a Keves that is 1 year old. Shnato Shelo. It's his year. Below Shana Shel Minyan Olam. And not determined by the calendar of the year, meaning not determined by Rosh Hashanah. The Tosafot Darosh over here brings what Tosafot quotes in the Gemara in other places as a problem with this determination of Keves Ben Shnato, is because the Torah tells you that you have to bring a Korban HaTamid on Rosh Hashanah. And if you have to bring a Korban HaTamid on Rosh Hashanah, the only way that you could bring a Korban HaTamid on Rosh Hashanah, which is Keves Ben Shnato, which would be a Keves in its first year, is if the determination of the year is the animal itself and not the calendar year. Because otherwise, anytime you have an animal that is born before Rosh Hashanah, automatically when it hits Rosh Hashanah, it'd be in second year and be disqualified from the Mizbeach. So So you'll say, okay, it'll be born on Rosh Hashanah, use it. You can't have that because you require an animal to run the Mizbeach has to be at least 8 days old. That means that at least 8 days before Rosh Hashanah, the animal has to be born to qualify for the Mizbeach. If that's the case, then every time you hit Rosh Hashanah, it would be the second year. You'd never have a Korban Tamid on Rosh Hashanah until you're 7 or 8 days into the new year. That should be proof positive that the determination of the age of the animal for Kodeshim is the animal's birthday and not the calendar year. So then, the Tosfot Arosh brings the answer here, that Tosfot brings in other places, like the Tosfot in Arachin, that you would only start counting the birthday of the animal in terms of its counting for years from the 8th day. It doesn't start from its birthday, because its birthday is not Roi the Mizbeach. Only on the 8th day, when it becomes Roi the Mizbeach, that's when you start counting. So if the 8th day would have turned out to be on Rosh Hashanah, that would make it qualified to be brought to Mizbeach on Rosh Hashanah, and that's how you'd have a Keves Ben Shenato on Rosh Hashanah, and not have a proof that it's driven by the animal's age, and not by the calendar age. That means if it was born 7 days before Rosh Hashanah, it would qualify in Rosh Hashanah, and still would be in its first year of life, even if you're driven by the calendar year, because the determination of the start or the age of the animal is the 8th day when it becomes Roi the Mizbeach, not the day that it is born. How do I know that the year by Batei Rechuma is also determined by the sale date and not by Rosh Hashanah? Amarkra, Atom Shnat Memkaro, until the completion of the year of the sale, Memkaro Shelo. It's based on the Shana of his sale. So it's particular to this sale, Velo Shnat Shel Minyan Olam, and not the calendar when it turns over to a new year. Shtei Shanim Shebastei Achuzah Minyolon. How do I know the first 2 years where you're not allowed to redeem a steicha chuzah in the time of the Yovel? How do I know that that's the case, that it's driven by the sale date and not by the calendar date? Amakra, b'mispar shnei tvuot im karlach. That he sells it to you based on the number of productive years the field will have. There it says shnei tvuot, the minimum of 2 harvests. That means 2 years. And there is a drush on that, pamim shata mucher, Shlosha tvuot b'shtei shanim. The fact that it says you have to have a minimum of shtei tvuot of 2 harvests means that sometimes you can sell 3 harvests that will be in 2 years, as the Rashi brings over here, as the Gemara describes in Arachin. It's a case where you sold it in Elul at the point of maturity. The person harvests that. Then it comes the next year, he harvests again. Comes the next year after that, before he hands it back to you, he harvests it early, and there he could get 3 harvests before the elapsement of 2 years. The only way that could work is if you're basing it on the years of the sale, not on the years of the calendar. If it's based on the years of the calendar, then you could never have 3 tvuot over 2 years, because as soon as you crossed over the calendar year, you'd already be in your 2nd year, and you could never reach a 3rd tvuah. Sheish shanim shebe'evet ivri minolan. How do I know that 6 years for Neved Ivri is based on his start date and not on the calendar? Amakra, Sheish Shanim Yavod, Uvashvit, you'd say the Chavshi Chinam. So that you work for 6 years, and then in the 7th year you go free. Uvashvit Nami Yavod. The fact that he goes free in the 7th year is because he worked a part of the 7th year. Well, the only way he can work a part of the 7th year is if it's driven by his start date, not by the calendar start date. If it's driven by the calendar start date, then as soon as he reached Rosh Hashanah, he goes free in the 7th year. He would never work any of the 7th year. The only way he could work a part of the 7th year is if the calendar date comes before his start date has elapsed 7 years. Therefore, even into the 7th calendar year, he still works a portion of that until he is into his 7th year. And that shows you that the Sheish Shanim is determined by his start date and not by the calendar. All right, we're going to stop here 5 lines down on top of Mem Chet Aleph, and we'll continue discussing this issue tomorrow.